On April 1st, and members in attendance are Representative Springer, Davidson, Pierce, Hoffman, Navar, and Co-Chairman Cotton and Herman. Today, we'll be continuing public testimony on House Bill 108, which is an act relating to aquaculture. And I want to emphasize again that we have a lot of information before the committee. The committee still has a lot of questions and concerns. And if we can't answer any of the questions of people testifying, that we'll definitely be taking down that information and keeping that in mind. So I'd like to proceed now.
Okay. This is moderator, and Gino, we'd like to go to Unlasta first. Are you on moderator, Unlasta?
Yes, we're online now, and we're waiting for some people to show up.
So you don't have anybody there to testify right now?
Yeah, we do, but we're expecting a couple more, and would prefer to be a little later in line, if you wouldn't mind.
All right, thank you. We'll come back to you. Anchorage, are you ready to testify?
Yes, we are. We have Jim Hemming first.
All right, please proceed.
Well, my name is Jim Hemming. I have operated Alaska's first blue mussel sea farm for the past 5 years. I'd like to testify in favor of House Bill 108.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, Roger, go ahead.
Yes. Start again?
Please go ahead.
Okay. I'll repeat again in case there was confusion. My name is Jim Hemming. I'm an operator of Alaska's first blue mussel sea farm and have been for the past 5 years. I'm here in support of House Bill 108. We desperately need regulatory support to allow sea farmers to operate. In particular, we need to legalize the collection of shellfish larvae so that sea farms can develop. We also need to provide a well-defined permit process that will allow commercial sale of shellfish. Bill 108 would provide that support. Sea farming is an opportunity to provide a considerable number of jobs for Alaskans, particularly mom-and-pop operations. Last year, I was invited to give a lecture at Kodiak at the community college, where they had a special session on mariculture. Standing room only audience, an incredible of interest on Kodiak and elsewhere in Western Alaska for various kinds of mariculture, both mussels, scallops, seaweed farming, and salmon farming. I would urge your support of this legislation, and so that we can get these things moving. We also need to get things formally recognized and supported so that the proper planning can go into development of these kinds of aquaculture. Thank you.
Representative Davidson.
Yes, Mr. Hemming, you've been operating for 5 years, and I was wondering, how do you assess your track record as far as environmental things are concerned, and what are you doing with the blue mussels that you're producing at this present time?
Okay, as far as the environmental question, I had to get a variety of permits, both state and federal, in order to operate. My farm began with some support from the state of Alaska's Office of Commercial Fisheries Development to do research on the technology. Once that was done, we applied for the various permits and did secure them. We're operating, in our case, on an unusual arrangement. I'm harvesting young mussels to stock my farm under a clam shovel permit, which is rather stretching the state regulatory process. It allows me to operate legally, but not as efficiently as it would if there were mariculture regulations in place. The mussels that we harvest are sold commercially to a wholesaler in Anchorage for distribution in the Anchorage marketplace to restaurants and supermarkets.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Hemmings, you mentioned that you did some work in Kodiak, and then you said also in other parts of Western Alaska. Can you tell me where?
I just mentioned that the interest was high in those places. At the aquaculture course on Kodiak, there were probably 100 local people in attendance at that series, but the community college offered a several-week course on mariculture there that also had high interest. In the Homer area, where I'm more familiar, where my sea farm is, there's a newly formed aquaculture association there, also a very high level of interest. There are 5 new mussel farms that are being set up this year in the lagoon by my operation. That's the area I'm familiar with.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Representative Davidson.
Yes, Mr. Hemming, again, you appear to have the kind of track record that would be very useful, and I was wondering if perhaps you could forward to us the some of the results of the research that you had to do as a requirement for the permitting process, and also how your operation has dealt with the matter of conflict users, the user conflict issue, the other things that I mentioned, and any other problems or things that you found out. I would sure appreciate that information, Madam Chair.
Okay, we do have a detailed report that we provided to the Office of Commercial Fisheries Development. I can certainly forward that on to you. We have not had conflicts with other users in the area. The rafts that we operate take up the space of 20 by 40 feet, plus the anchor lines and a couple of buoys, and that's it. Surface area is very small to have a sea farm.
We have 6 others. The next is Thorne Ferguson Jr.
Please proceed.
Yeah, my name is Thorne W. Ferguson Jr. I'm with T. Ferguson Construction. We're a small family-owned business and are Native Alaskans originally from Southeast Alaska. We've been studying mariculture for approximately 6 years. We have visited various sites in Washington State, in British Columbia, in addition to consulting with NOAA's Northwest Alaska Fisheries Centers at Manchester, Washington, and in Juneau. Our contacts include many people in the private sector, including John Lindbergh and all the noted specialists in this field. We have purchased land and are in the process of getting the necessary permits. This has been a long and drawn-out and expensive process due to the lack of permitting regulations and guidelines. The project includes a fish farm and lodge located on Prince Wales Island, just south of Heidelberg. We intend to use local Heidelberg people and hopefully to use their cannery processing facility and also the airport at Kowak. Our feeling is that Alaska must get involved in mariculture before we get so far behind that it will be impossible to catch up or compete economically. Alaska should be a leader in this new industry since it is one of the few locations in the United States that is ideal for mariculture. With an increase in imported salmon from Norway and other parts of the world, it is imperative that the legislation move forward to help accommodate private companies and individuals in this industry. Thank you.
Thank you. The committee appreciates your comments.
Would the next person in Anchorage please come forward and state your name and proceed?
Yes, my name is Lynn Gabriel, and my firm, Graf Martin Company, works in a consortium called Arctic Seas Development Group, promotes fisheries and marine development in the state. Arctic Seas Development Group supports HB 108 as a key to increasing Alaskan-based activity in the seafood industry. Development of the full range of mariculture operations represents a highly productive use of one of Alaska's greatest, most abundant resources, its coastline. Current laws permit many forms of aquaculture farming to take place, but none deal with the industry as a whole. Safe and profitable development of mariculture requires that we address shellfish, sea vegetable, and finfish operations equitably and under the same statutes. In doing so, HB 108 will help avoid the creation of duplicative regulations and potential conflicts. Alaska has over 33,000 miles of coastline, more than the rest of the continental United States combined. Not all of these regions will be suitable for mariculture, But where it is feasible, it can provide a much-needed expansion and stabilization in employment. Mariculture operations require a full-time, year-round labor force. In some communities where traditional fisheries are declining, and little or no opportunities exist in new fisheries or other industries, mariculture may be the only bright spot on the horizon. It's the contention of Arctic Seas Development Group that the time has come to establish fisheries development as a statewide priority. HB 108 is a direction. It provides the framework within which all areas of mariculture can be developed with concern for the environment, existing fishery activities. We support passage of this bill and urge the legislature to look into other areas of fisheries development as a means of boosting our flagging economy.
Thank you for your comments. Can the next person in Anchorage please come forward and start to testify?
Hello, my name is Judy Rames. I work for Rural Alaska Community Action Program. We have a resolution in support of mariculture, and I also am a board member of a village coalition that's interested in mariculture. I'd like to read this resolution. It's a real short. It's from the Village Participation Conference, and it says, whereas mariculture presents important economic opportunities for many rural communities, and whereas rural communities need to become more self-sufficient, and whereas this method of economic development suits many rural communities, now, therefore, it be resolved that the 1987 Village Participation Conference hereby supports pending legislation regarding mariculture. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Can the next person please come forward? Anchorage, do you have anybody?
Good morning. My name is Nick Brogan. I am a member of an organization called Growfish Inc. That's a private nonprofit hatchery in Southeastern. We completely support HB 108. We feel that the contribution to regional employment is paramount, and the organization that we have is the only source of private employment in that community and an area of about 20 miles around it. We have an interest in both promoting finfish and shellfish farming. We are very desirous to enter into agreements and expect to do so in the relatively near future with organizations who can further that. We would gladly provide any information that we can to assist in passage of this bill.
Information. Can the next person in Anchorage please come forward and start testifying?
Hello, my name is Thomas Pease. I'm 23 years old. I was born and raised in Alaska. Bristle fished for the past 6 years, both in Bristol Bay and Cook Inlet. That long line for halibut. I wish to voice my support for the mariculture bill, and more specifically for salmon farming in Alaska. I've spent a better part of the winter researching the process of salmon farming in Alaska, and I've followed closely the legislation pertaining to mariculture. I've attended the teleconferences over this past week, listening to arguments both for and against mariculture. Much of the opposition that I've heard consists of unfounded testimony based on emotion, hearsay, and sheer ignorance. At yesterday's teleconference, an opponent to the bill claimed that Alaska's declining economy could not possibly develop and support a mariculture industry. I would like to remind the audience that nowhere in this bill is there a request for state funding or subsidies. Unlike the commercial fishing industry, there would be no low-interest state loan program for fish farmers. It is understood that any individual wishing to enter the fish farming industry will have to secure his own private backing. The state has merely been called upon to regulate a fish farming industry that is provided for in Alaska's state constitution. Another point of argument that has been misconstrued by the opposition throughout these hearings has been that of water rights. Opponents of the mariculture fishermen from the prime fishing areas and boat anchorages would be lost if fish farming were permitted. It seems that many commercial fishermen have this preconceived notion that a fish farm blankets every square inch of a bay. Again, not true. Most salmon farms consist of a single raft of 10 or 12 floating pens, each measuring 20 by 40 feet. In some countries, fish farms are required to be spaced as much as 2 miles apart, leaving ample room for other commercial and recreational activities. A woman from Southeast reported at yesterday's hearing that she had friends who intended to apply for a fish farming permit for the sole purpose of gaining access to valuable beachfront property that they then could build homes on. Considering the fact that startup costs for an average fish farm can run as high as $500,000, few people will be making farm site selections based on home site potential. Besides, the clause that is likely to be inserted in the bill will require a fish farmer to prove up and begin production within a given period of time, thus preventing any speculation. And throughout these hearings, opponents of House Bill 108 have alleged that agriculture proponents are striving for exclusive rights to resources and markets. Yet this argument comes full circle. But with the imposition of limited entry, Alaska's commercial salmon fisheries has become just that, exclusive. Limited entry has created an economic barrier that prevents me and other young commercial fishermen like me from entering the salmon fishery in an owner-operator capacity. It is reserved a publicly owned resource for a select few. And recently, I've had some statistics that indicate that over 20% of all limited entry salmon permits are held by non-residents. Most salmon processing outfits are run by Seattle-based and Japanese companies. And in light of this, the younger generation is being excluded from the salmon industry. And I asked the legislature and fellow Alaskans, where are jobs for younger generation Alaskans going to come from in the future? I'm currently unemployed, yet unlike many Alaskans, I've decided to remain here. I am attached to the land. Alaska is my home. I'm here to seek alternate sources of income, to search for answers to Alaska's bleak economy. And I feel that mariculture is Alaska's answer. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Tom. And I believe we have your letter in our packet. Representative Davidson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It appears that Mr. Peace hits on many of the points that are going to be part of this long-term discussion on mariculture. And I just, with your permission, like to ask a couple of questions.
Sure, go ahead.
You indicated that startup costs were, in fact, I think you mentioned the figure of $500,000. It would appear that as a young fisherman who's had a lot of experience in various fisheries throughout our state, that you have a certain kind of lifestyle as regards to fisheries. And I was just wondering how many people you thought were sitting around with $500,000 to get started in this kind of operation. I think that you've raised some very good and important points, and I think that the effort by everybody on this committee is to, in fact, extend economic opportunities to people like yourself. However, in this time of financial crunch, we're being asked to come up with the monies to develop a management plan almost before the fact. It would appear that it would be wiser to have a management plan to deal with the issues of mariculture, siting, permitting, who gets what, when, who is displaced, what to do with them. And I was just wondering, you mentioned that the management, you mentioned that private industry was going to be solely responsible for the cost. However, you talk about government regulating and developing a process, and I was just wondering how or where you thought that the money should come from for the government's cost in that part of the mariculture issue.
Well, I don't know quite where the source of that money will be,
However, I think it's awfully short-sighted to for a legislature to claim that they don't have the funding to even set up regulations for an industry, when in fact, new industry is what the state needs in times like this. I mean, I think in the past 6 months, there's really been emphasis placed on a need to diversify Alaska's economy. We can't just wait for another oil boom. And, you know, what do? We turn our back on an entire generation of Alaskans until 20 years down the road a new boom comes along. I think the financial backing for these fish farms, it will be in the private sector. We may have to call on technologically advanced companies from outside of Alaska to help with the initial startup, but as I said before, commercial fishermen criticize outside support. They should look no farther than their own industry to view examples of outside participation in the Alaskan industry.
Thank you, Mr. Pease.
Thank you.
For the record, I'd like to note the presence of Representative Schultz. Is there anybody else in Anchorage to testify at this time?
Next, we have Robert Meyer, and then Nick Brogan would like to express his personal views.
After Mr. Myers, we're going to break from Anchorage and go to Petersburg and Kodiak, who have people with time constraints because they have to go out fishing. So if we have time, we will come back to Mr. Brogan. Please go ahead with your Mr. Myers from Anchorage.
Madam Chairman and committee members, my name is Robert Meyer. I am chairman of the Resource Development Council's Mariculture Committee, and I'm the president of the Myers Chuck Aquaculture Association. I am here today to express our support for House Bill 108. With your indulgence, I shall begin.
Please go ahead.
Thank you for this opportunity. Aquatic farming is an important economic force in many coastal communities because it is based on local hire and provides a steady source of income for local residents. Aquatic farming is not a panacea and will require many years to reach its full potential in Alaska. To develop into a robust Alaskan industry, aquatic farming needs, as a minimum, one, administrative support, parent departmental support, and a simplified permitting process. Two, supportive land use policies. And three, access to broodstock. These needs are outlined in the Resource Development Council's Fisheries Development Action Plan and are provided for in the proposed legislation, Bill 108, with a land use amendment, which is presently under consideration. Your support of the proposed legislation is needed if the industry is to continue developing in a timely and efficient manner. Aquatic farming is and has been a legal enterprise in Alaska since before 1949. Presently, several mussel and oyster farms are operational. Scallop and sea vegetable pilot projects are underway, and some 19 salmon farming ventures are in operation. Some of them have been operational for about 10 years. P&P salmon hatcheries are by definition aquatic farms and are engaged in salmon net pen farming. They incubate salmon eggs, rear the resulting fry, and harvest the adult salmon. The only difference between a P&P salmon farm and a, for instance, low-cost Coho and Chinook salmon. This issue obfuscates the real issues facing the Alaska salmon industry. Quality. Alaskan fresh frozen full-caught salmon are 1 to 10 days old by the time they reach the processor. Gillnet and seine-caught fish are 1 to 3 days old. In addition to being several days old, many of these fish, particularly net-caught fish, may have massive internal bruising, which is not evident until a fish reaches the consumer. The competition we as Alaskan fishermen face is between high quality fish, frozen, fresh. Example is salmon frozen at sea, and the traditionally processed and frozen fish described above. The issue of quality must be addressed by the Alaska salmon industry, because irrespective of this legislation, Alaska salmon competes with top quality fish in the world marketplace and will continue to lose its market share unless the quality of Alaska salmon is improved. In addition, the issue of Alaskan farmed salmon competing with Alaska caught wild salmon is moot, because by 1990, it's predicted that salmon farmers worldwide will produce some 150 metric tons, or about twice the Alaskan production of Coho and Chinook salmon. The capital required to develop the quality necessary to compete in the world market can come from within the salmon fishing industry by reducing the number of fishermen, 2, increasing the number of fish available for harvest, or 1 and 2 stated above. Therefore, I suggest that the legislature fund the Revolving Fisheries Enhancement Loan Fund so that more fish can be produced, and that a limited entry buyback program be designed and implemented to reduce the number of fishermen competing for this limited resource. On the question of employment, aquatic farm projects are similar in scope to present commercial fishing ventures, such as hand trolling and king crabbing. However, the economic contribution to local and regional economies will be much greater because of local hire policies and local purchasing. In summary, I strongly feel that HB 108 is needed if aquatic farming is to continue developing and thereby provide needed economic and employment opportunities which are not now available to many coastal communities. I also feel strongly that you can help the salmon industry compete with other high-quality fish products through funding of the Revolving Fisheries Enhancement Loan Fund and by supporting development and implementation of the Limited Entry Buyback Program. I would like to conclude with some points I was asked to deliver by Myra Sharp Aquaculture Association. Aquatic farming in Alaska is legal. Aquatic farming is presently being conducted in the state. Oyster and mussel farms are operating. Scallop and vegetable pilot projects are underway, and salmon farms are in full operation. Aquatic farms practice local hire, and in all probability will continue to employ state residents. For example, our board of directors are all local residents. We and each of the PNP hatcheries in the state employ primarily state residents. Aquatic farming provides an economic alternative for most coastal communities. At full operation, we will be the only private employer in the community of Myers Chuck. Aquatic farming operations are year-round ventures and generally provide a stabilizing and income source for local communities. Aquatic farms undergo a time-consuming and complex review process before they are permitted to operate and must conform to all existing state and federal health, safety, and environmental regulations. For example, some 4 years were required to obtain our PNP develop the capital necessary to enter their respective fisheries. Therefore, it seems reasonable to assume that farmers of the sea will be able to do the same. Aquatic farm projects can vary in size from mussel farms with capital investments similar to that required for hand trolling to fin fish farming with capital requirements comparable to crab fishing.
Mr. Myers, this is the moderator in Juneau. I would like to ask you to please come up and so we can get on to the other side, please.
I'm sorry for the delay. I hope I'm not inconveniencing you too much. I have one last comment, and that is, how do we monetarily support the developing aquatic farming industry? And I would put that question back on the assembled august body of representatives and ask and offer the observation that we are able to provide for the support and regulation of existing industries within the state, and aquatic farming will not significantly add to this burden. Thank you for your indulgence.
We would like to change the agenda again here real quick. Port Protection is online, and we're going to go to them. At this time, though, I'd like to remind all sites to please keep your testimony to 3 to 4 minutes, and I'll urge you to submit your written testimony. Port Protection, are you online?
This is David, the operator, and Shirley Piandra at Port Protection is the first caller.
Thank you very much, David. Go ahead, Shirley.
Yeah, here, this is Ed Meir here in Port Protection. I'll be going before Shirley, all right?
That's fine, go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to introduce myself very briefly here. I'm Ed Meir of Port Protection, commercial troller for salmon, involved the local environmental problems of the Prince of Wales Island for the past 15 years. And I'm not going to address the economic viability of sea farming. Shellfish and crab can be produced in this manner, as can marine organisms or plant life successfully. I'm addressing salmon and salmon only, and some of the information I've been able to put together in the last year and a half regarding the viability of pen raise and the natural stocks problem. And so I'll just read this little bit I have here for you and then let you move right along. My concerns are environmental. I believe that the crowded rearing environment of commercial salmon produced in the salmon farm business will introduce an inferior quality product to the market already filled with this sort of problem. The agribusiness itself and its growth throughout the world has been putting an inferior foodstuff, whether it be land-based or sea-based, for the last 15 or 20 years, eroding small farms, commercial fishermen, and people who depended upon the bounties of nature to produce food. In the rearing of salmon, we know now that there are some many problems. The Norwegian-based salmon agribusiness there is developing, is already competing and hurting us, putting a uniform product on the market, as stated by the previous spokesman from Anchorage. But we all also know that they're using animal products to feed these that have a high internal cholesterol rate. It goes through the food chain into the processor or the grown salmon, and then is eaten by the consumer. We know that only the omega-3 fatty acid, according to the University of Oregon recent reports, is found only in natural wild-run salmon. This will lead to the consumption of this wild product will be a great medical benefit to the American people, and it should be promoted by the state of Alaska. Pen-reared salmon in ocean waters can lead to interdiction to the ecosystem of massive amounts of antibiotics in fecal material waste. The netting itself to hold the salmon may have highly toxic chemicals which will be absorbed by the penned fish themselves and go into the human who eats the food. that they're using prevents algae bloom, but it's also highly toxic and can go directly into the food chain. It also, the pen rearing of salmon in our coastal waters has a sort of a sewer effect. It introduces massive amounts of contaminants, fecal materials, into coastal waters. It can affect the local sea life that would ingest these hormones and antibiotics. They would also serve to introduce disease-resistant organisms into the water, which would be taken by bypassing natural stock who aren't resistant because they haven't been having this constant ingestion of these hormones and these biological agents to prevent disease. The health problem, right now we're facing in America a health problem through farmed chicken and beef products which contain these and have already been shown by national testing to be really carcinogenic and harmful and dangerous. So my fight is not with the practicality of ocean farming. That's been proven all over the world, but it's the quality of the product that counts. And I think right now in the Panhandle where I live that we could be making our streams productive again with natural stocks and spreading natural stocks. And we have so much water throughout Alaska that natural native water that already grows these fish and does it admirably and to weights that you could never gain a 6 and 8 pounders in the pen. Bivalve production, shellfish production, these things, especially if they're land-based and contained and the water that's pumped back in is as clean as it went in, on land I have no trouble with at all. It's the ocean rearing of certain species that we really have to look at carefully. And our product now in the salmon industry is vastly improved by champagne brine. I've had conversations with Cliff Phillips, a large local salmon purchaser in Ketchikan, and his product has been received highly all over the world, and it's usually 1 to 2 days now for our troll cod product to get into the local producers and shipped out by air. So I think we've all got a handle on that. It's the environmental concerns that really worry me. That we know so little about this, and I don't think we need any more hormone and animal fat cholesterol and antibiotics introduced into the human food chain by the use of these products. And I'm not speaking of shellfish now; I'm purely and explicitly speaking of salmon. The economics of it, agribusiness will take it all eventually, as it always does. It's taking the farms in America. The local dependency, a local hire issue could be done through stream enhancement and through keeping and maintaining a pristine environment. The shellfish and oyster producers, and I have no qualms with them. If they do it successfully, more power to them, and the state should help them all they can. But in the area of salmon and herring, which are the two wild stocks that contain the omega-3 fatty acid, be so necessary for the health of the American people that we stress this. And that this become, even if we put this top line as even to the American public, they're going to be grateful and they will buy our product over the pen rig when the truth is known. The Chernobyl explosion contaminated large doses of that pen rig fish in the Norwegian area. So in addition to these other things I've mentioned, we're also taking radioactive byproducts into our food chain by eating these things. The state of Alaska could be in the vanguard of the movement to keep natural foods in the American stomach and in the stomach of the world, and there in the long run would be our salvation. Agribusiness, no thank you. Agribusiness has in the end dehumanizing. Any fisherman would never swap eight or 10 hours a day swamping fish in rubber boots in a fish pond for the life at sea. I know I once never would. The profit motive has never been my object in the fishery. It's only a survival mode, and for most people, I think it is today too. So that's all I have. But the scientific studies that I've read recently are showing how much of these bad products are coming into us through these many sources, and thanks to our agribusiness, you know, that are promoting this sort of thing. And I think we should really be aware of it. We have this is our last chance. Alaska is the last uncorrupted, unpolluted state, and I think in that alone, it's worth its value or worth more than any of the countries that are forced to go to agribusiness on the sea because of polluted coastlines, bad waters, and poisonous environments. Thank you. That's all I have.
if you're talking about TBT or tributyltin, the legislature has put a ban on that, and we've put out resolutions and bills and so on, and I believe the aquaculture associations are also concerned about that, too. Thank you.
Okay, just one more comment. The idea of hemophilic necrosis, I believe that's a pronunciation of a fatal liver disease that's been generated by hatchery-raised fish, has potential threats to our native stocks as it is, and I'm sure that pen reared in the ocean, dumping that fecal material of a mutated source in could maybe kill off our natural stocks entirely in the years to come if we're not careful. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you. Thank you. We'd like to go on to the next person in port protection. I would again like to remind you, please keep your testimony from 3 to 4 minutes. If you have further testimony than that, please submit it in writing to the committee. We have 8 more sites online today that have to testify. Please go ahead to the next person in port protection.
Terry Klein is the next person.
No, I have to hold my...
All right. Shirley Piedra, the particular issue that I'd like to testify on is the competition for the market with the wild salmon. The majority of the people here at Port Protection buy on the wild salmon as their livelihood because they are commercial fishermen here. The troll caught fish, we feel, would be in direct competition with these pen-reared salmon. I feel that of all the reading that I have personally done on this, that there is a possibility that there will be a flood of farmed salmon on the market in direct competition with the wild salmon. The commercial fishing industry, of which we are part of, I believe needs to have more money spent from the state on the marketing effects for our salmon. By having the pen-reared salmon in direct competition, while we have this problem with the amount of money that we can spend within the state on marketing for our salmon, I believe that this would be a direct problem for us because we wouldn't be able to market our salmon properly. However, I'm not personally opposed to the mariculture of shellfish, and I think that this would be a great potential for the state's economy. But as for the pen rearing of salmon, I believe that it would be very detrimental to our commercial fishery.
Thank you very much, John. Can we have the next person to testify?
Do we have anyone else online from Port Protection that wishes to testify?
Yes, this is Terry Klein, Port Protection.
Go ahead, Terry.
Commercial fisherman for salmon and halibut, other species. I wanted to mention about the quality of the commercial salmon now being caught, that the education program going on now by the fish buyers and by individual fishermen trying to put out a quality product by taking care of their fish when they're first caught, and learning to keep the protein of the fish in a top quality condition. When it goes to the fish buyers and then have to handle, of course, for a long period of time until it finally does go to the consumer, it is a highly perishable product that a fish farm can be done when the fish are small, when they're fry and before they're actually put out into the ocean, as one gentleman called it, ocean pastures. Taking care of these fish when they're hatching them and feeding them with these other products introduces a lot of variables for these fish to have to compete with a natural salmon who's already accustomed to the process and ecosystem that he lives in. So that the bill needs to have its quality examined, I believe, very carefully, especially not to include and pass a bill such as that everything will pass at once, that particularly on a salmon, the amount of harm that it could do by passing one bill without thoroughly educating themselves on the possibilities of the detriment that it can do after it gets started, I believe should be looked at. I believe these other people have said they spent 8 years getting the present process of permits. If they're that interested in it and they've done it and they've actually succeeded in a off later and come back. But the damage, I believe, is already done. Until they're about 6 inches, they are in pens, and they don't do anything but go around and around in the pens and eat the competition for them to go out and make it a higher quality fish isn't there. The conditions aren't there when they're only up to 6 inches of length. So I just hope that they will keep in mind, if they keep the bill of 108, if they do pass it, that it's highly looked upon in keeping up with the highest quality standards of potential good that it could do in terms of the fish, rather than and the ecosystem, rather than just trying to get jobs for people and trying to make jobs and money for people with the stake of the natural salmon on the line as boom or bust scam that people can just get it. If they're interested enough and it takes them 8 years to get a permit, I think they'll do all right. But I would not like to see that process taken lightly, where anybody could get a permit and just start trying to cash in on some new scam in Alaska, the boom or bust economy that we've always been. So that's my feelings on it, Jen. Thank you much.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else in court's attention to testify at this time?
Yes, I'm ready to testify. My name is Gretchen Goldstein. I'm with Port Protection. I haven't heard what everyone said, but I certainly agree with Terry. We have to watch out for our natural stacks first. And as far as this bill goes, I believe that at least that pen rearing of fish should be removed from the bill, and I think it should be considered separately and in great depth. You've probably heard all the reasons, all the problems associated with it. I don't believe we can afford to introduce poison food anymore into what we're already feeding our people, and we have to look at this very carefully before we have any of this pen rearing of fish. So I believe that should be removed from the bill. And as far as the other parts of the bill, what Mr. Klein was saying, any other species that are being introduced unnaturally should be examined very carefully for what effect it's going to have on the total environment, on the food chain of those species that naturally exist here. And I think it should be examined very carefully, and we should allow no poisons, no antibiotics, no more poisons should be added to the natural environment. And everything, I don't know whether the bill provides for this or not, but I think any introduction of any new species unnaturally should be examined very carefully. So that's all I have to say, and I believe I'm the last person to Port Protection to speak.
Okay, thank you very much, Port Protection. At this time, we're going to go to Petersburg. Petersburg, are you online?
Yes, I am.
How many people do you have there to testify?
Like four people that want to go today, if possible.
It's possible. You can go now. Just remember to keep your testimony 3 to 4 minutes, please. We have other sites that are anxious to be online also. Please go ahead.
My name is Jerry Marrigan. I'm a fisherman from Petersburg. I oppose House Bill 108. This bill is a poor step in formulating a comprehensive mariculture program. It raises many questions and very few answers. It does not provide for a speculation-free permitting process. It does not provide for siting and biologic safeguards. The list is long on what the bill does not provide. What it does provide is rapid licensing that specifically excludes the Board of Fish, hence the fishermen, from the process. We do need a mariculture program, especially in regards to shellfish. In regards to finfish, I do not feel we need to jump on the bandwagon with British Columbia. They are the first country with existing runs of wild salmon to promote pen rearing. We should not jump on board. We should watch and learn from their experiences. Alaska will not miss the window of opportunity. There's always room in the market for a competitive product. I do not feel that pen-reared salmon in Alaska has been demonstrated to be able to compete in the market without some form of subsidy. There are fiscal notes attached to this bill. Subsidies never seem to shrink. They always get bigger. Now or never thinking is inappropriate. Rather, the development of mariculture policy should be do it right or don't do it at all. This bill does not do it right, and thus forces your committee to fill in all the blanks. Also, the bill in its present form does not meet the governor's position points. Given these problems, especially with finfish, I support a moratorium on finfish mariculture. Rather, rather than have a haphazard mariculture policy result from legislative time constraints and will allow an unbiased study to be conducted. I'm not talking about a House research report on the effects of mariculture that's a document over 100 pages with all of one page on negative effects, but like an honest look at the net benefit of pen rearing with the cost of displaced fisheries, the cost to the state pocketbook, and the cost of natural resource degradation being accounted for. In short, the net benefit to all Alaskans, especially in jobs lost versus jobs created. Since any type of mariculture is private resource consumption of public natural resources, public should be included in the permitting process. One avenue for this is the inclusion of the Board of Fish and thus local fish and game advisory boards. The public has the right to be included in any process which changes multiple use to single use. To sum up, there seems to be a lot of problems here on numbers where people get their sources. If one fellow just cited average pen size as 40 to 50 feet on a side, Mr. Kearns last week testified the average pen size in British Columbia was 100 to 150 foot on the side. There's a great discrepancy in these numbers. There's also a great discrepancy in how to figure your capitalization costs. Many givens are assumed in some reports, like a dock, existing buildings, utilities. It's hard to figure accurate capitalization for mom-and-pop programs if different numbers and different pro studies are to be cited without an honest look. I would like an honest look to be done at this, and I hope the committee will take the time to at least do this for the public and for fishermen in general. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. The next person in Petersburg, please testify.
This is Malin George. This is Malin George. Am I on?
Yes, we can hear you just fine.
I did on Alaska 41 years ago today. And I echo the previous speakers. I feel that I request or favor moratorium being set on all applications for mariculture permits until a comprehensive study can be made of the multiple uses of all areas in Alaska, especially southeast. I have lived through the time of fish traps. I see these net pens as being 21st century fish traps, but with even greater effects on the environment. The fish traps were removed when the season was over. These will be in place year round. I listened last week to the testimony, read all the handouts, and went to the seminars at the Southeast Alaska Marine Trade Fair at Sitka. There is no question that 10 to 12 net pens varying in size from 20 to 20 to 50 by 50 or even 100 by 100 will affect water current patterns. As stated in the handout by Mike Kale and Bill Pollack, these structures will decrease water movement, which may in turn result in an increase in sedimentation from food particles, species, and shell debris. The concentration of ammonia-related compounds generated from decomposing organic matter may increase, and the amount of dissolved oxygen may decrease. They want a bay with adequate flushing capabilities. At the same time, they want a protected bay to protect their pens from storms. Water temperature is important. A certain salinity is necessary, one that isn't being used for other uses such as crab fishing, crab storage, recreation, logging. Does not have a wild run of salmon that will be fished on by seiners or gillnetters. In my almost 30 years of trolling, I've traveled all over Southeast. I can think of few places that meet all these criteria. In reality, there just isn't such a place. Bill Hurd from the National Marine Fisheries Service told that the kings are easily stressed. The recreational boater and sport fisherman will find a sign at the entrance of his favorite bay, no motorized boats allowed, because he might stress the salmon in the net pen. Second thing I want to say is that I do not want any of the 3% aquaculture tax on fishermen going for pen rearing. Every fisherman should be given a chance to vote on this. I also do not want any state money for state loans or ADF&G money going into it. What always happens is that some group gets a loan, then they demand concessions, or they can't pay it back. Every time I go up to ADF&G and suggest that they make a remote release of excess fry from Crystal Lake Hatchery, I'm told there are no funds. I want there to be no funds for mariculture, which has an unknown success rate as compared to the ocean ranching, which we have had success with. In this report by Kale and Pollock, it states that their purpose is to provide an unbiased and accurate analysis of the issues. I think the state should be neutral on this, and I'm afraid they are not. This will affect all of our lives. Do we want this latest version of the fish trap? I thank you, unless there's some questions.
Thank you very much. I was going to hear the next person from, where are we? Prince Petersburg, all right.
Yes, Madam Chairman, members of the Resources Committee, my name is Dave Bedford. I live in Petersburg, and I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you. In the past months, proponents of salmon pen rearing have presented a lot of figures which purport to show the profitability of that industry. On examination, the plausibility of some of these figures and their applicability to Alaska seem questionable. The cost per pound of Alaskan farmed salmon would be very high compared to that of our competitors. In the market crunch of the 1990s, we could expect an Alaskan farmed salmon industry to be vulnerable. Statistics used by salmon farming advocates suggest that the business is not very costly to get into and that it is highly profitable. $60,000, it is claimed, in Table 6 of Aquaculture in Alaska will get you into a 50 metric ton mom-and-pop salmon farm in the Vancouver, BC, Seattle area. What is omitted is the assumption in the original Sea Alaska report that you already have buildings which can be adapted for storage in a slaughterhouse, a dock in place, a truck and trailer for transport, and a skip with motor. The $60,000 figure is cast into further doubt by data from the Vancouver, BC area, which indicate the startup cost for a 50 metric ton farm to be on the order of $150,000 Canadian dollars or $110,000 US. And that's capital cost. That doesn't include the fact that you're going to be in for 2 years of operating costs on top of that before you get a penny back out of the operation. The startup costs for a mom-and-pop salmon farm in Alaska are unclear, but they will certainly be higher than in southern BC. The Sea Alaska report suggests that construction costs in Alaska are 70% to 130% above those for the Vancouver-Seattle area. So a 50 metric ton farm in Alaska will cost considerably more than $110,000 to set up. Operating costs are also considerably higher in Alaska. Labor will cost about 20% more than down south. Feed costs in Alaska are presently more than double those presented by Sea Alaska for the Vancouver-Seattle area. Insurance for an oyster farm in southeast Alaska of similar capitalization to a 50 metric ton salmon farm runs $4,000 to $5,000. Adjusting only these three factors and allowing for some drop in Alaskan feed prices, which might or might not occur, the annual operating expenses for a 50 metric ton salmon farm in Alaska swell to $258,000 in comparison to $183,000 for the Vancouver area. Higher startup costs, operating costs 40% above those for southern BC, and higher shipping costs would combine to inflate the cost of 10 salmon reared in Alaska. Sea Alaska suggests that producers in the Vancouver area will be able to get their fish to market for almost $1 per pound less than Alaskan fish from a large 200 metric ton farm. At present real feed costs, the Canadian advantage jumps to $1.48 per pound. The margins are even worse for small Alaskan producers. The Norwegians, the Irish Sea Fisheries Board, and the Canadians recognize the likelihood and implications of overproduction in the farm salmon industry. Prices have already dropped substantially on the European market. Alaska, as a high-cost producer, will occupy a very vulnerable position. The industry knows how to insulate that position. The Sea Alaska Aquaculture Executive Summary calls on government for financial, research, training, and other support programs, as well as, quote, appropriations to provide the most competitive advantage possible for fresh Alaskan products, end quote. They want to see, quote, government support for smolt production by subsidies, incentives, or loan guarantees for the industry during the first phase of development, end quote. They see the necessity for, quote, adequate loan guarantees for salmon farms as the industry will not succeed without adequate and available financial support, end quote. All that is in the near term. How much more support will this industry need when the market pressure foreseen by the Norwegians, Irish, and Canadians becomes a reality? I submit to you that passing House Bill 108 will guarantee that in the future there will be further bills for your consideration to determine how to subsidize this industry so it can exist. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your comments.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Christopher Pace.
Society and a member of the Alaska Trollers Association. I support the concept of mariculture that was adopted by the 1986 Southeast Conference, and I'm considering myself investment in mariculture technology. However, I have serious reservations concerning the private captive rearing of salmon for profit in Alaska, and I'm opposed to HB 108. Overall, I feel that HB 108 is a bad piece of legislation, and ultimately it acts as a detriment to the creation of a viable Alaska mariculture industry. Basically, I'm against a law that takes control and responsibility of fishery resources away from the Commissioner of Fish and Game and the Board of Fish and gives it to the Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development. I'm against the potential issuance of hatchery permits by the Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development. The Fish and Game statutes in Title 16 that govern private hatchery permits stipulate that the Commissioner of Fish and Game may issue a hatchery permit, while HB 108 implies that the Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development will issue the same permit as a matter of course. I believe it's an invitation to legal chaos to allow for the issuance of hatchery permits by either of two separate state agencies. I think this would occur if HB 108 is adopted. As it's written, the bill would place a burden of proof on the Departments of Fish and Game and Environmental Conservation to tell the Commissioner of Commerce what's necessary to mitigate the impacts caused by commercial hatcheries that might be authorized under a proposed Title 8. This situation reminds me of the kind of flawed logic that led to the space shuttle disaster. That is, the necessity for someone to prove that a system will not self-destruct rather than to prove that it will actually work safely. What really clinches my opposition to the HB 108, however, are the proposed amendments that it calls to make to Title 16, the Fish and Game Statutes. It's the proposed exemption of fish farming from regulation by the Board of Fisheries, from participation in Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, from recognition as a commercial fisheries activity, or from regulation by the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission that seems to generate the animosity from most of the existing segments of our fish production industry against this concept of mariculture as a whole. All the other participants in the Alaska seafood business have to play by these rules. HB 108 would give an unfair competitive advantage to a new mariculture industry that supposedly wants to be complementary to the existing industry. The remainder of my testimony, I'd like to question some of the conclusions presented to you in the report titled Aquaculture in Alaska. I believe this report understated the current level of salmon cultural technology that's being practiced in Alaska. I agree with what Ted Myers said earlier, that Alaska already has legal salmon pen culture for coho and chinook. And here in Southeast, you can see examples of this kind of culture at Neath Bay, at Hidden Falls, at Medvegie Creek, Taku Harbor, and at Carroll Inlet. These examples are Fred and PNP facilities that rear salmon to the optimal size necessary to generate maximum social and economic benefits in relation to the dollar expenditure. The report prepared for you really understates the impact of the Regional Aquaculture Association. Alaska's aquaculture associations rival any of the Japanese, Norwegian, or Canadian models of cooperation that were mentioned by the House Research Agency. Much of the success of the present spread and PNP investments has arisen because of the comprehensive salmon production planning that resulted from cooperation of the state, these regional associations, and the federal government. The existence of the goals and objectives contained in these plans, I think, served to increase the probability of success of the investments that were made. And what disturbs me about the present trend of mariculture in this bill is that I see a lack of evidence of a reciprocal, publicly identifiable plan or goal for this new mariculture industry. Without the publicly supported plan and quantifiable goals and objectives, our Alaska mariculture industry could potentially resemble the uncontrolled Canadian example that we've heard so much negative about. Another conclusion in the report I salmon fishermen by the U.S.-Canada Salmon Treaty. Well, that's not correct. What limits our Southeast Hatchery-originated Chinook production is not the egg incubation space. You can grow a million eggs in something about the size of a clothes closet with a garden hose for water supply. What really limits our Chinook production here is water availability and containment structures for feeding and rearing juvenile fish. The present method that we're using at Neats Bay and Carroll Inlet and Hidden Falls is to bypass these constraints is to transport the surplus fry to saltwater rearing pens at locations away from the hatchery central incubation facility in order to maximize production and spread the location of the terminal harvest. These fish are optimally released as either zero or one check smolts, and they result in an addition to Alaska's Chinook quota. Well, what I'd like to pose is what happens when a FRED or a private nonprofit project cannot site one of these saltwater net complexes because the site's already been given to a private salmon farm that wants to use it for its own private purposes. I think what happens is that the Alaska industry as a whole is going to lose potential market share for these premium quality salmon. I want these siting questions addressed or coordinated through a comprehensive salmon production plan. However, it'd be hard to do one of these kind of plans because at present there's no quantification of the amount of these viable culture sites other than a statement in the report that says that the potential appears to be quite large. Well, what's been the case with the actual salmon hatcheries that we presently have, it's proven to be otherwise. The real number of viable aquaculture opportunities has turned out to be quite less than the original estimates.
Mr. Pace, excuse me, this is the moderator in Juneau.
I'm almost done.
Thank you. Yes, we do have other sites that are trying to get on today, and we're going to go into other business at 10:00, so if you could sum up, please.
Okay. I believe it's ill-advised for the state to throw the door wide open for development of these remaining sites by private industry without knowing the potential of the resource. Further, it's ill-advised to invite site development without a clear goal and a plan for utilization that provides for the greatest public benefit. So I'm in favor, although I'm opposed to HB 108, I'm in favor of funding for a mariculture resource inventory and for a resumption of funding for the regional comprehensive planning program that was halted in 1987. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'm assuming you're talking about the House research, the Orange Report Aquaculture in Alaska, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, just for your information, you said a report prepared for us, and it was prepared for the legislature, but no one requested it from the legislature. It was prepared because people were doing interested in aquaculture, and the governing board decided that was an issue that would be before the legislature, so they did it, and I have a lot of questions on that report myself.
Okay, we're all through at Petersburg.
Thank you very much, Petersburg. We're going to go to Kodiak now, where I believe Ed Jack is there to testify.
Hello, Ms. Chairman. This is Ed Jack. Can you read me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to give testimony on Mariculture Bill HB 108. I don't want to address the bill itself tremendously, but what I would like to address is the fact that shellfish and finfish are being dealt with as a joint item on this particular bill. If you will check your testimony, you will find that very little testimony has been given concerning shellfish mariculture, which is of the greatest interest to the various people around Kodiak, I feel. There's an emotional problem in wild and domestic wild stocks and domestic rearing of salmon. And it's been aggravated by problems in the past in locations of fishing sites where there's been seine and gillnet fishermen confrontations, various other problems of among these people. The natural result is that
the seiners and gill netters, drift gill netters, have an automatic negative or an opposing viewpoint and feel that they are being impacted or being threatened by any additional fishery on their stocks. I don't think this is the case with the shellfish portion of it, although the bill does not address a careful selection of sites so that there won't be impact on the existing fisheries at present. I think that this needs to be addressed in the bill. There is one other thing in the bill that bothers me, and that is the use of the word shall in many instances where it should be, or probably would be better to say may give a permit. The research and permit process at the present time is in chaos. It's extremely difficult to get a permit to even do research. The problem is that if we continue to put this on hold, we are going to end up with no research being done at all around the Kodiak area to see if it is feasible to have any mariculture here in the future. It's predicted, one thing about the salmon that I'd like to say is this. It is predicted that there'll be 150 metric tons of pen-reared salmon imported into the United States within 2 years. It's going to have an effect on price.
Mr. Jackie,
what I see existing is that if all of this comes in as a foreign product, that the state of Alaska and the federal government has very little control of what is happening.
Mr. Jack, excuse me, this is the moderator in Juneau. Can you hear me?
Oh.
Excuse me, Mr. Jack, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we need to sum up. We need to get on to another site now.
The only other thing that I would like to say is that there has been a welfare problem in many of the small villages around Alaska. And the problem that exists is that there is no alternative of work in most of these villages for most of the year. And mariculture, shellfish mariculture, if I may, could provide additional jobs over a period of time. In this regard, I would like to see the bill separated and one bill address shellfish and the other finfish. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. At this time, let's turn on Alaska. Are you online on Alaska?
Yes, we're on here. Do you pick us up?
Yes, we can hear you clearly. Please go ahead with your testimony.
Okay, my name is David Otness. I'd like to say hello to Mike, Adelaide, and John, who are on the committee. I am a third-generation fisherman from Petersburg who now resides in Alaska. I've had the pleasure of fishing in every area from which the previous testimony has emanated. I've fished every major gear type in Alaska except trolling, but do have many acquaintances and friends in that fishery. I'm trying to be objective in light of previous testimony, and as a result, find myself somewhere in the middle of the vitriolic of both sides, vitriolic, of House Bill 108. I, along with several other fishermen who have testified, have witnessed many changes, technological and cultural, in what was once just mule work and a close-knit sense of community extending from one end of the territory and now state to the other. However, it's rare today to see a boat give up a day's fishing during the peak of a runner season to give another assistance that they need to tow to town, unless it's an extreme emergency.
didn't fish commercially during the critical years for limited entry points because there were no buyers in the area to whom they could deliver. Their people fished here for hundreds of years. Whoops, sorry about that, guys. They can still go to work on a Seattle crab or joint venture boat if the skipper and crew don't happen to be prejudiced against Alaska natives, which happens often enough. They do get to watch Washington state boats come into bay and fish. Therein lies my first argument for development of the mariculture industry. No, please, listeners, I said mariculture, not salmon farming. I've heard some pretty intense testimony yesterday and today, most of it against the mariculture bill, but seemingly more directed against salmon farming in particular. I think that distinction should be emphasized, as I, too, have serious reservations about these pan-sized critters flooding the marketplace. I also found it interesting that the origin of this Norwegian-Canadian thorn in our side came from an American university in Oregon and was then expropriated and exported back to us. Shades of Honda, Toyota, Sony, etc. To my fellow salmon fishermen so opposed to mariculture, especially those dependent on sockeye, I must ask, do you know how far advanced the Japanese are on their sockeye hatchery program? They're doing it. I feel your concern could be better directed at promotion of red salmon to consumers in other countries as well. We are so dependent on the Japanese to set the price and buy these fish that we are losing sight of the long term. For example, in 1978, I was paid as high as $1.35 a pound of bright dog salmon. As the Washington State Department of Fisheries increased its fertilized egg sales to Japan's Hokkaido hatcheries, and the Japanese subsequently capitalized on their return as adults, we now find ourselves 9 years later getting 35 cents a pound for the same fish. We as commercial fishermen spend so much time fighting and scratching for allocations in respective areas, the big picture gets fogged in. That picture worldwide is cost and energy-efficient protein production. Mariculture, as represented in House Bill 108, is a starting point for employment on a long-term basis for many people in rural areas along Alaska's coast. It is expressly stated in each chapter of the bill that strict controls will be maintained. My major gripe with the bill offhand is the emphasis on pen-reared salmon. There are too many underutilized, less glamorous species within the intertidal zone which are available and have the potential to be cultivated. I made a note of various seafood prices in retail supermarkets while in Anchorage this February. Black mussels, which can grow on pilings and floats, etc., $3.98 a pound in shell. Octopus, $7.49 a pound. Rockfish fillets, otherwise known as brown bombers, $4.59 a pound. There are many others. Take exception to the woman from Kodiak who claimed public domain on state beaches. State leases for salmon set nets have been with us for a long time and set a precedent. This is not to say that I believe in preempting existing valid users, as was voiced in testimony from Tokine and elsewhere. In my final analysis, I feel there is a void waiting to be filled via mariculture. The harvesting of fish from shore-based operations should show immediate returns and cost-effectiveness in terms of fuel expended, insurance rates, and safety of employees, and consistent quality. Limited entry was not promulgated to protect commercial fishermen from competition. I was amongst the first group of fishermen to meet with Governor Egan in 1973 on this issue, and it was discussed as a biological management tool, not a forum for super exclusive use and capital gain at an ever-spiraling permit price. Once again, I reiterate, time and technology wait for no man, and sticking our heads in the sand by trying to deny this bill rather than asking for revisions to it is only going to forestall the inevitable. Change is the only constant. Be prepared. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Some good points there. The committee appreciates your testimony. Do
you
want to continue on? Is there someone else there in Alaska to testify?
Chairman Adelhard, Kathy Gunnick, and President of Alaska Corporation, and a citizen of Alaska. I would like to testify on supporting HB 108. There are many reasons that the bill speaks to, and many of them are covered. My main interest is in the development of mariculture for year-round employment opportunities out on Alaska.
We have the land base. We have currently leases to fisheries and the long-term leases. We have the, historically, I guess I'd like to speak on historically, the nature of the fisheries in the Unalaska area has been cyclical. In the early 20s, we had herring, and that was wiped out by the military during the Second World War, when they served in Market State. No longer have that fishery locally. And king crab is the same way. Bottom fish may go that way. I support this bill because I'd like to see year-round employment. When the cycles disappear, so do all the non-residents, and the local people are left without an economy. And I think that mariculture in this area would be helpful to subsidize year-round employment. We do have a support system, and the support systems such as shipping and so forth are down also during the low cycle. And I recently returned from Hawaiian Island. I looked at some of their mariculture over there, and I haven't had the opportunity to stay with the marine biologist, Oahu, who was in the shellfish mariculture, and they supply a different, some commercial, they supply the hotels in Waikiki with fresh products, and they don't appear to be competing with any commercial fishermen at the present time. Their statement was that the only competition they have is the big Alaska boats that come in and wipe out their fisheries. I can go on about all the other things, but I know that there are big people in time is running out. I'd like to say that we do support
H-0108,
thank you.
Yeah, at this time I'm going to have to shut down the teleconference. I'm sorry that we didn't get to the other sites, but we're going to move them to tomorrow. We did have some very good testimony today, and I appreciate that. And anybody wishing to testify tomorrow, we'll try to get to you. With that, I'm going to close down the teleconference on H-0108.